Hello, family. My name is Robin, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And I'd like to welcome everyone to Walk the One. I'd like to open this meeting with a moment of silence followed by the serenity prayer. God, grant us the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And it has no rules, but the hotel has some rules. We requested the guests under the age of 18 are accompanied by a parent at all times. Please ensure that they are not left unattended at any time. Areas that we particularly want guests to pay attention to are the swimming pool, the fitness center, and the entrance of the hotel. Our hotel is 100% non-smoking. Therefore, please ensure that no one is smoking within the facility. There will be a designated smoking spot outside the hotel where smoking is allowed. If a guest smokes in any of our rooms, a fine of $300 per day will be applied to the credit card in the reservation. Pets 25 pounds or less are allowed. Pet fee of $50 will apply. Pets have to be kept on a leash at all times. And also, that please make sure you wear your registration tag at all times, because what will happen if you don't have your tag, they will refer you back to the registration table. So just a reminder, when you're in the meetings and you're walking around, make sure you have your tag on. Okay, I asked a friend to read. Who's an addict?
Hi, my name is Susan. I'm an addict.
Hi, hey, Susan.
Who is an addict? Most of us do not have to think twice about this question. We know. Our whole life is thinking we're centered in drugs in one form or another, getting and using and finding ways and means to get more. We live to use and use to live. Very simply, an addict is a man or a woman whose life is controlled by drugs. We are people in the grip of a continuing and progressive illness whose ends are always the same.
Jail, institutions, and death.
Thank you. And I'm actually a friend to read. What is NA program?
Hi, I'm Patty. I'm an addict.
Hi, hey, Patty.
What is the Narcotics Anonymous program? NA is a nonprofit fellowship or society of men and women for whom drugs have become a major problem. We are recovering addicts who meet regularly to help each other stay clean. This is a program of complete abstinence from all drugs. There is only one requirement for membership, the desire to stop using. We suggest that you keep an open mind and give yourself a break. Our program is a set of principles written so simply that we can follow them in our daily lives. The most important thing about them is that they work. There are no strings attached to NA. We are not affiliated with any other organizations. We have no initiation fees or dues, no pledges to sign, no promises to make to anyone. We are not connected with any political, religious, or law enforcement groups and are under no surveillance of any kind. Anyone may join us regardless of age, race, sexual identity, creed, religion, or lack of religion. We are not interested in what or how much you used or who your connections were, what you have done in the past, how much or how little you have, but only what you want to do about your problem and how we can help. The newcomer is the most important person at any meeting because we can only keep what we have by giving it away. We have learned from our group experience that those who keep coming to our meetings regularly stay clean.
Thank you. And I have to friend to read why we're here.
Hi, family. I'm Janine, and I'm an addict.
Hi, Janine.
Before coming to the Fellowship of NA, we could not manage our own life. We could not live and enjoy life as other people do. We had to have something different, and we thought we had found it in drugs. We placed our use ahead of the welfare of our families, our wives, husbands, and our children. We had to have drugs at all costs. We did many people great harm, but most of all, we harmed ourselves. Through our inability to accept personal responsibilities, we were actually creating our own problems. We seemed to be incapable of facing life on its own terms. Most of us realized that in our addiction, we were slowly committing suicide. But addiction is such a cunning enemy of life that we had lost the power to do anything about it. Many of us ended up in jail or sought help through medicine, religion, and psychiatry. None of these methods was sufficient for us. Our disease always resurfaced or continued to progress until, in desperation, we sought help from each other in Narcotics Anonymous. After coming to NA, we realized we were sick people. We suffered from a disease from which there is no known cure. It can, however, be arrested at some point, and recovery is then possible.
Thank you. And I asked a friend to read the present identity statement.
Hi, I'm Sean, an addict.
Hey, Sean.
My identity statement. In Narcotics Anonymous, we are presented with a dilemma. NA members identify themselves as addicts and alcoholics, cross-addicted, talking about living clean and sober. The clarity of the NA message is blurred. Speaking this message, there are two diseases, that one drug is separate from the rest. Narcotics Anonymous makes no distinction between drugs. Our identification is as addicts, is all inclusive, allowing us to concentrate on our similarities and our differences. Press statement. As our 11th tradition says, our public relation policy is based on attraction rather than promotion. We'd always maintain personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. The primary purpose of our public relation effort is to tell the story of Narcotics Anonymous and what our program offers to still sick, suffering addicts. Members of the press are often attracted to our convention and we welcome their interest. However, we do not disclose our last names in the media as identifiable members of Narcotics Anonymous. If members of the press approach you, please direct them to the convention information booth located in the lobby of the convention center.
Thank you. I'd like to thank all the readers. And the topic for this morning is complacency is our enemy. And this time to share their experience, Strength and Hope, we have Bobby M. from the Bronx.
Morning, everybody. I'm an addict. My name is Bobby. Welcome to the newcomer. The only requirement for membership here is the desire to stop using. I didn't come here with a desire to stop using. I came here with a desire to stop dying. That was quite a while ago. Got a clock here to keep me honest. So, complacency is our enemy. This is a meeting for people who may have had a contact with complacency at some time in their recovery. For somebody who may be dabbling with complacency now, and for somebody who thinks that they may have a complacency problem in the future. It's kind of like meeting your future ex-wife. You know there's going to be pain involved. I'm here because I'm an addict. I suffer from a disease that's incurable and fatal. And it's only diagnosable and treatable by the person who suffers from it. We're told by our literature it can be arrested one day at a time. Now, I don't know about anybody else here, but you may not believe it, but I've actually been arrested once or twice, actually a number of times. And I've never been arrested for things that would, well, a couple of serious times, but I've always managed to slip and slide through the system. But being arrested for me always went like this. You're under arrest, cuffs, car, cell. Stick my hand in my pocket, pay a fine, see your judge, blah, 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 and I'm out. Now, if my disease can be arrested and get out as quick as I can get out, getting arrested doesn't bother my disease a hell of a lot. That means I got to pay attention to my disease and to my recovery and what that brings into my life on a daily basis. Today can be the day that I relapse. I got clean in 1991. I just celebrated 20 years. Any one of those days, and believe me, it's always been a day at a time for me. It was a day at a time in the beginning, and it's a day at a time now. Any one of those days could have been the day that I relapsed because of complacency. Complacency is an inundating factor in all of our lives. Now, whenever I get asked to speak anywhere, I take it seriously. I don't take much in my life seriously, but I do take this very seriously because it saved my life. So my wife calls me up and says, "You're speaking at the Westchester Convention. By the way, thank you to the programming committee for actually considering somebody like me for this, because I think almost anybody in this room could do this better than me." I look at the literature. I say, "What's my subject? What does it have to say about it? What do I got? Where's my ammunition?" There's four sentences in the basic text about complacency. And it leans very, very strongly towards people with time. Actually, the way that it's put is, complacency is the enemy of members with substantial time. Did I say welcome to the newcomer?
Yeah.
In my opinion, if you got 15 minutes clean in this process, you're a miracle. And that's substantial time. And that leaves you wide open for complacency to come in and shit all over your life. All right? It doesn't usually show up for a couple of years because we get on that cloud and we get energetic and enthusiastic about the recovery process. But the fact is that at any time, you're susceptible for complacency to come in and jump all over you. So, I got to do a disclaimer here, because since there was only four sentences in the basic text about complacency, I did what I've always done. In my early recovery, I was given the best advice that I've ever received in recovery, and that is, don't make any decisions based on your own thinking. So, I took this out. This is a telephone for those of you listening to the CD. And I, like all of you, have several hundred phone numbers in this device. And most of them belong to people in recovery. So I called my friends. And I said, speaking at the Westchester Convention, my topic is complacency is our enemy. I need your help. Do me a favor, tell me what comes off the top of your head when I say the word complacency. And I got a lot of good feedback. And the gist of it is, I'm stuck. Okay? I've arrived. I'm clean. It's okay. I can handle it. Okay? A lot of stuff about the ninth step, both self-care and making amends. A lot of stuff about the sixth step, wallowing in defects and shortcomings. It's centered a lot about from 4 till 9, you know, four step being kind of like procrastinating about doing the fourth step, procrastinating about sharing it in the fifth. Wallowing in defects because they really don't want to let go of them. You know, not wanting to pray to have them released. Making that list. You know, making that list. Somebody called me the other day about making the list. And he wanted to contact his ex-girlfriend to make sure he didn't hurt her feelings. I said, didn't she say she hated you? He said, yeah. I said, what does she need to be on the list? You know, you're not thinking about the list. You're thinking about your dick. You know, cut it out. Cross her off. She doesn't belong there. And 9, which is, 9 is not easy for anybody, because not only does it involve making amends, but it involves taking care of ourselves, which for a lot of us is not really, you know, for a lot of us it's like giving up that extra chocolate eclair, you know, or going and making it to the gym, or stop, you know, abusing yourself in many, many ways, you know, like the trip to Empire State, or, you know, that casino, I understand, is devastating to the members in Westchester County and the Bronx. So, there was a lot involved. My sponsor's first comment was this. The oldest and the first thing I ever heard about complacency, come place your ass in a chair. And I said, that's an oldie. He goes, but it's a goodie. And he's a big doo-wop fan, so I guess he's entitled to say that. And I like that one because it brings us to a meeting. And meetings are the place where complacency first impacts almost everybody that I spoke to. I don't need to go to a meeting. The Knicks aren't playing tonight. The Rangers are playing tonight. You know, I'm going to stay home and watch the game. I deserve a night off. I got to tell you something. When I was using, I only used if I was alone or with others. All right? If I wasn't in jail or in a hospital, I was either on my way to using, or on my way back from using. So now that I'm clean, I have the opportunity to dwell in this wonderful opportunity here. called recovery, why am I taking time off to not go to a meeting? You know, I got clean with two guys that were a couple of the greatest friends of my life. One of them was clean for 5 years, stopped going to meetings, relapsed. One of them was clean for 15 years, stopped going to meetings, made millions of dollars, got bored listening to the same old people complaining about the same old stuff at meetings, stopped going to meetings. He was out there for a year with millions of dollars, came back broke and almost killed himself. And I used hard with this guy. I used to walk into a bar with this guy. The bartender once actually turned around, handed me $20 and said, please go drink somewhere else.
Wow.
That's how hard we used. And now he's back for 4 years and I'm so glad. We thought we were going to lose him. Complacency keeps us from working on steps, traditions. Okay? I mean, the first step, we walk into this process, we admit that we're powerless. Who can say, oh, I'm clean, I got this, and say they're powerless at the same moment? You know? Who can surrender? Because the opportunity that we have to live in the solution in this process involves living a life of surrender. We have to surrender incrementally every single day, sometimes every single second. I remember when I first got clean, I had so much noise in my head, I thought my head was going to explode. I had to say the serenity prayer in 1 second flat to keep myself from using. So why would I not want to work step, involve, grow, expand exponentially within the spiritual process? Complacency. You know, I can do that next week. You know, I don't have to worry about it. Oh, I did 1, 2, and 3. I'm okay. I've heard people say, yeah, I did 1, 2, and 3. I got 12 years. I sponsored 5 guys. I don't have to do 4. And that guy was doing good stuff. But I wouldn't want to be living inside of him. You know? Because peace and contentment comes from inside. And you got to clean that mess. I got to clean this mess up inside. And I got to stay at it. Because you know what? I fall short every day. I'm not here saying I know more than anybody else in this room. I'm just the guy they asked to talk about it. You know? And I made phone calls to find out what you all thought about it. So that I could represent it the way a group conscience would. Sponsorship. Right? This is a big foundation for us in our recovery. We sponsor people. People sponsor us. It's a serious thing. It's not something to say, you know, yeah, I got like, you know. My sponsor, and if anybody asks my sponsor to sponsor him, he says yes. All right? There's like 40 or 50 guys that say my sponsor sponsors him. He actually sponsors about 12 of them because 12 of us call him. And he goes, the rest of those guys, I don't know what they're doing. You know? He goes, if you call me, we'll schedule some step time on Monday afternoons. And the first person that calls me is the one that gets in, because that's when he's got time. You know, he takes that day off every week to do his chores and do step work. Every week he takes a day off from his running his own business to do his chores in the morning, to keep his life straight, life on life's terms, and step work in the afternoon. And if you don't book him, you're in the next week or the next month, because his sponsees do step work. Service work is something I was always taught that when you're asked by Narcotics Anonymous, you say yes, if you can. Because sometimes, you know, I mean, you got to make hay when the sun shines. You know, if you got a job and you can't speak at a meeting because you're working that night, then of course, you know, you can't say yes. I have a commitment to my 91-year-old mother-in-law to be at her house in Brooklyn every Saturday. I can't say yes on Saturday. Actually, this Saturday, I told my mother-in-law I'll see her tomorrow. But I got to be there on the weekend to see her because she's 91 and she needs to see people in her family. You know, that's a commitment. That's life on life's terms. That's part of my life, you know. If I wasn't the type of person that could do that, I probably wouldn't be the type of person that could stay in recovery. You know, when I first got here, I wasn't the type of person that could do that. I was a degenerate. There's a facet of doing service that my wife, my beautiful, smart, sexy wife, Susan, is speaking on the my N.A. Prima Monump says that I have to say that whenever I mention her. She's speaking on the H&I panel in a little while. That's a great way to do service. But a lot of people do service in a lot of quiet service. They pick people up, they drop them off, they don't ask for gas money.
That's right.
All right? They buy a hamburger for a newcomer. You know, they sit on the phone and listen to somebody lie to them for a half an hour because that person needs to lie to somebody for a half an hour. This is all service. Some people work in what they call the field. Okay? Half the people in Narcotics Anonymous come into Narcotics Anonymous and they want to save the drug addict world by becoming a drug counselor or something in the field. And a lot of these people that I've seen over the years, unfortunately, feel as though because they work in the field and they talk recovery all day long to people that are still using, that makes them immune to the wiles of complacency. And many, many, many of these people wind up counseling drug addicts while they're loaded at their job because they think working in the field is sufficient to keep them clean. It's not. You got to go to meetings. I got to go to meetings. If you're an addict and you got what I got, you got to go to meetings. When I got clean, I couldn't. I had been an avid reader all my life. When I got clean, it turned out that the absence of drugs and in my body somehow biochemically affected my eyes, and I was unable to read for more than 2 minutes at a time. The letters turned into little bugs running around on the pages. So I had I wanted to get into the literature somehow, so I got IPs. And these things saved my life because I couldn't read the basic text for about a year. And the IPs were something that I could read in 2 minutes. And there's a lot of great information. Actually, whole sections of the book are in, like, Living the Program and Recovery. And I mean, there's a lot of them that are in the IPs that you can get pieces of the book and actually walk around with. Actually, a lot of times, my sponsees, I insist that I hand them a copy of The Triangle of Self-Obsession and I make them carry it around with it in their pocket because I find that any time of day or night that I feel like it's a good idea to think about something besides recovery, I can take that out and remember the fear, anger, and resentment that drove me to the life of degradation that I lived for so many years. We all should have a home group, all right? And in that home group, we got something called a business meeting. Walking out without going to the business meeting of a group that you go to every week is an act of complacency. It's saying, oh, I'm okay, they'll take care of it. Mm-hmm. They don't need me. You know, Grey's Anatomy is on. You know? I'm gonna go home. They'll take care of it. Let them vote on it. I don't need a commitment. You know, let the newcomer have the commitment. You ever see, you know, I mean, there's three people at the business meeting. And there's 40 people walking out the door.
That's right.
You know? So you got the chairperson, the treasurer, and the coffee dude who's hanging on for dear life because he's got 6 days, and they're running a meeting that 40 people are going to. Mm-hmm. Complacency. There's something in, you know, that kind of irks me a little bit, and I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes or telling anybody what to do with your money, but there is something called the seventh tradition. All right, now when I first came around, I went to 10 or 15 meetings a week. I don't do that anymore. You know, I go to a few meetings a week. When I first came around, I didn't have a dime in my pocket. Now I got a business. So when I go to a meeting, you know, I don't take the basket and shake it so it sounds like I threw some change. You know, we've all done that, and I wouldn't condescend to say that there's anything wrong with doing that, because we've all done that. I did it, you know. If you haven't done it, God bless you. You had more money than I did when you came in. But then I started putting dollars in, you know. And it's 20 years later. Things have gotten better.
That's right.
You know, I don't put dollars in anymore. You know, I put a little more in. And look, we all have, as of January of this year, I lost half my business. I'm still putting more in. All right, this is about life and death. I got to tell you something. When I went to Hawaii, I met a young lady from Russia. She had traveled 4 days to speak on the international panel for 20 minutes. Traveled 4 days and 12,000 miles. She told me that she took a meeting to a rural spot in Russia. It took her 52 hours on a train to travel, that she paid for out of her own pocket, traveled for 52 hours on a train to bring a meeting to a place where they didn't have meetings. And she spent every day translating the basic text from English into Russian. That's service. That's somebody going like this, reaching in their pocket and putting it on a counter for recovery. All right, now granted, we don't all have it. Lots of us are living on very restricted incomes, and you know, if it wasn't for the digit from Social Security, we wouldn't have anything. But those of us that do should consider this aspect of recovery, that as we grow and as things get better, maybe we could contribute a little more. Just a suggestion. There's a lot of complacency in relationships. All right, I hear stuff from men that sometimes I can't believe how stupid we are as men. And the things I hear from women, I can't believe how crazy you all are. But that's okay. But I have relationships with all kinds of people. You know, I'm a rare individual. I'm actually a happily married man. That's not easy, you know. And it's not always, it's not my wife's fault that it's not easy, because my wife is a gem. But okay. But sometimes you got to lean into, you know, you got to lean into the dysfunction of a relationship and say, what's my part and what can I do different to actually help those relationships move along in a positive direction. You know, I mean, if I see somebody that I might find interesting and attractive, that means I got to go spend more time with my wife. That's what it means to me. You know, and if the sex isn't as hot as it used to be, maybe you should do something about it. You know, clean time. This complacency thing assaults people. The more clean time you have, guy who took me to my last detox told me he had 10 years. He said, this is the most dangerous time in my recovery. Every single day of my recovery is the most dangerous time in my recovery, because every single day is the day that I can relapse. The more you get relaxed in this process, the more you are susceptible to the assault of complacency. And as far as spirituality is concerned, you ever hear the God whine? Oh, I feel like I got away from God. I don't know about this higher power thing. Whine, 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 whine. Right? Somebody came up to me. I had about 60 days clean. He goes, hey, you know, I was listening to you. I think I know what your problem is. I said, yeah, what is it? He goes, you're an asshole. Where do you think God went? God's everywhere. You're the one that moved away. So he gave me a little piece of paper and said, pray every day for 30 days and act as if. See what happens. I'm still praying. That was 20 years ago. You know, if I ain't praying every day, I'm miserable. Miserable. And I don't know how anybody else handles it, but that's it for me. You know, I'm an addict. I'm a sick person. deep down inside, on a cellular basis, I'm a down, dirty, degenerate person. That person can come back in an instant if I allow complacency to push me around. I got to go to meetings. I got to sit up front. I got to attend my home group. I got to go to business meetings. I got to reach out to the newcomer. I got to make phone calls. I got to answer it no matter who comes up on the faceplate, whether I want to talk to him or not. I got to contribute. I got to say yes when asked. I got to pray. I got to be conscious. I got to listen. I got to listen and I got to listen. We need to develop listening skills in this program instead of just talking. And one final thing I got to say is, you see this? If you're listening on a CD, this is a cell phone. Nothing lit up when I open this. Okay? That's because it's off. When I go to a meeting, I pay attention to what's going on in the meeting. That's why I'm here, to save my life. Not to sit there and exercise my thumbs texting Tweedly D to people for whatever reason. All right? I don't do it. I don't do it. I'm here to save my own life. This is serious. I came here yellow, bent over, and almost dead. I made a left-hand turn when it was a right-hand turn to the graveyard. I wound up in Narcotics Anonymous, and it saved my life. I'd like to thank you all for spending this time with me this morning.
Hi, family. My name is Robin, and I'm a grateful recovering addict. And at this time, to share the experience, grateful and hope, we have Lawrence P. from Westchester.
All right, Lawrence.
My name is Lawrence P. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
Hey, Lawrence.
And I'm going to use your watch, Bob. Thank you for leaving it. Thank the program committee for inviting me to come share my experience, strength, and hope. I do want to give a disclaimer. I am a person who suffers from a disease from which there's no known cure. It can, however, be arrested. At some point, recovery is impossible. So, by saying that, I want to let you know that complacency is probably the one word that contradicts that statement. That's the word that tells me that, you know, I suffer from the only disease that tells me I'm all right. See, any other disease, if I had diabetes, heart trouble, I would know, hey, things are not cool. All right? But complacency, for me, is that word that tells me I'm all right. Now, again, I did the same thing as Bob. I looked it up in the basic text, and there's not a whole lot on complacency. But what it did say is that after you've had a few cups of that great coffee that they serve at every meeting, and after you've put two or three bowls of oatmeal in you, and all of a sudden your pants start fitting better, and you have somewhere that you can go and people actually want you to be there, all of a sudden, what complacency does is it gives us this other disease called amnesia. And what it does then is it makes us forget why we're really there. See, the newcomer, and welcome to the newcomer, because again, you're the most important person at any meeting. And see, the newcomer, I remember when I was new, I this was the greatest thing since sliced white bread. All right, I was this drug addict who you guys allowed to come in, because I wasn't allowed in too many places when I used. There were some drug places I wasn't allowed in. That's where my disease took me. And, you know, it's bad when you can't even go to a crack house. They don't want you there. Because they're scared you're going to steal something. So I come to this organization called Narcotics Anonymous, and you people say, hey, keep coming back. We're going to love you until you love yourself. Well, as a newcomer, that was like wonderful to me. So, you know, I did the 90 meetings in 90 days. I was at meetings so much that I would go from a meeting to a meeting. How many of you have done that?
Yeah.
You know, so you remember that first year. You couldn't wait to get it. You had the key tags all down your side, every color there was. I didn't, for the first 2 years, have a key to put on one of them tags. But you know what? That's when I believed anything you would tell me.
That's right.
See, the topic is has the word enemy in it. Now, there's some enemies in recovery that are right up in front of you. And that's the thing we learn in our literature, people, places, and things. That's right up in front of us. And it's screaming at us. You know, so we know to avoid those things because you got people that are telling you to avoid those. Don't do this. Don't go and show off in front of your old buddies. You know, people still using, you know, misery loves company, not competition. Mm-hmm. You see, so nobody really wants you around. You looking good, they looking bad, mm-hmm. especially if you used to look bad with them. All right. But what happens is complacency will tell us that all the things we did to look good, we don't have to do anymore. And here's the funny thing about complacency. It's not one of them enemies that are right up in your face. It's very quiet, very subtle. Because, see, don't forget, everyone, we suffer from a disease that is cunning, baffling, and powerful. And it's very insidious. See, and the insidious part about it is it whispers. Doesn't talk loud. All right? It will tell you when you come home at 5:30, you're so tired, you can't go to a meeting today. Now, it won't even tell you about Grey's Anatomy. You'll be asleep long before Grey's Anatomy comes. See? But, again, now you're the same individual that was going to 45 meetings a week. All of a sudden, because life has shown up, because you actually now have a job to go to, listen to this little whisper that tells you you no longer have to do what got you that job. Because let me just really be clear about this. We don't really go out and get jobs and get houses and get family back. Our recovery and the rooms of Narcotics and Anonymous give that back to us. Because we willingly, we got to remember this, again, that complacency gives us amnesia. We forgot when we threw all that away. Willingly. All right? I have never been, well, no, I can say this. I have never been robbed while I was using of anything that was important. All right? I've been beat like every one of you have, but I've never been robbed. I gave things away willingly. You know, I hear the word, this is just me. I didn't lose anything in my addiction. I freely gave away everything. My love for my family, the people who had the audacity to simply care for me, those were the people I hurt. See, I wouldn't go hurt a stranger, you see. But getting back to complacency, now that, you know, again, I've had a few cups of coffee and been in this process a few 24 hours, and, you know, I've done everything. I've worked the steps, you know, I got a sponsor, I go to meetings, and, you know, it whispers every now and then, hey, you know what? You got it. And as Bob so eloquently told us, that you never have it. Because if you just had it, then it wouldn't be a process. It means I wouldn't have to keep doing this, all right? I wouldn't have to keep seeing all of you and being reminded that, guess what, Lawrence? At any given time, if you don't do what keeps you here, you'll go back out to what you were doing. See, today I'm entrusted to do a few things. See, I was that guy that you couldn't trust with anything. See, I was the wait right here, I'll be right back guy. You know, and anybody that just laughed at that, they've done that. All right. I think, matter of fact, I think I'm still waiting on you. I'm just messing with you, bro. But you do look familiar. No. You know, complacency tells me, in the morning when I get up, I do not have to make a spiritual contact with the God of my understanding. It tells me that I do not have to start the day with the power greater than myself that gives me a daily reprieve. My complacency, again, never has yelled at me once. I'll be driving down the street in the morning and it will tell me, you really don't want to do that Monday night meeting tonight. It'll tell me I'm tired long before Monday night gets there. Again, that insidiousness of being complacent. You know, they talk about it being in the book, An Enemy of People with Time. And, you know, again, once the pink cloud lifts and, you know, you actually can make a decision about what you want to do and how you want to do it. Even today, though, our literature and our program teaches us whatever decision we make, we should run it by someone else. You know, I've heard that if I'm asking the question, I sure don't want to be the voice I hear answering it. You know, so it's odd that I'm speaking on this because my sponsor and I have been going through this same thing. He says complacency will send you back to the forest. And you'll walk into the forest and not realize you've gone back. And it's so subtle, it's nothing that happens right away. You know, you look around and it's been a few months since you've been to the meeting. Because, you know, here's what it's funny. We come into recovery with all the attributes necessary to do recovery. We get here and we forget them all. How many of you have trust issues in recovery? You're all crazy. Every one of you done put your dollar into somebody's hand and they said they gave you something that's going to take you to a place nobody's ever been before. Let me just say this to you. From my practical experience in using, you can get high off of sheetrock. And anybody that's laughed has got high off of sheetrock. You remember when you trusted to put your money in somebody's hand, they told you this is the bomb, you turned around and they had disappeared. But you come in here, we give you a few suggestions, and all of a sudden you can't trust nobody. All right? You can't trust nobody. I don't know about you, but in my active addiction, I did not take one day off voluntarily.
That's right.
There was a few times the man, as we call him, kind of interrupted my using. You know, as Bob talked about, telling me to turn around, put my hands behind my back, get in the car. And my only thought is, I hope booking is not packed. So, but see, when I got arrested, I never had more than a nickel. I've actually had a judge say, man, don't bring this guy back no more. Don't arrest him no more. Because this evidence, the baggie is bigger than the evidence that you got in here. I'm tired of seeing him. Let him smoke that little nickel's worth of crack. Don't bring him in here. You know, I'm just being real. But, you know, it's odd. I come in here all of a sudden, and what complacency does is, first thing it takes away is my sunlight of the spirit. Because if I'm being complacent, that means I'm in a really bad place. And it's funny, again, because I can't see it. It takes you folks to tell me. You folks know long before I do that I'm in complacency. The brother in the back doesn't see me at the meeting anymore. Hey, what happened? I used to see you every Monday night. How come you're not at Monday night? You know, how many of us don't do meetings unless we have a commitment? Well, there's only 5 commitments at every meeting. So, you know, complacency, what it does for me is it tells me, again, Lawrence, you're all right. You don't have to do commitments. You don't have. Well, I got a friend who stopped using his insulin. Well, last week they rushed him to the hospital. All right? That's what complacency will do. It will rush you right back to your disease. You know, we find and hear about people with time relapsing. And you say, well, you know, God, they were at every meeting, they were on every committee. They actually spoke at World Convention. What happened? They got complacent. You know, very few people just walk up out of meeting and go use. After you've been here a couple minutes. I don't see any of you just leaving up out of here, going into the hotel parking lot and using. But I tell you what, stop doing the things that you're doing and you won't make the second convention. You won't be here next year to have this convention. Because that's the thing, over time, complacency will kill you. Using will be the least of your problems after time. See, because see, with complacency, I not only neglect my recovery. If I neglect my, hey brother, you know I love you, man. I just had to say that. I'm sorry. It's just someone I have a lot of love for, and I just saw him come into the room. Complacency, if it stops me from doing my recovery, then it's going to be sooner or later that I'm going to stop doing everything else. The job's not going to mean anything anymore. The responsibility's not going to mean anything anymore. The family's not going to mean anything anymore. And one day, I'm going to go down the street, and where I usually made a right, I'm going to make a left. And if I make that left, here's what I got to do. Long before I make the left, I got to buy a sleeping bag. I got to buy a tent. I got to go find a doorway to sleep in, because it won't be long before I'm right back where recovery brought me from. And that's all due to complacency. Now, let me show you really quickly how to never be complacent. All right, you like that one? All right, here's what we're going to do. You get a support group, because again, we cannot determine for ourselves when we're being complacent. It takes other people. So it takes a connection to your sponsor. How many of you don't mind quoting your sponsor until he tell you something you don't want to hear? You know? I mean, I've done it. Go to Means, quote everything is fine. Yes, me and my sponsor had a meeting this week, and he said, but the minute he says something to you you don't like, you don't go share that at a meeting. You know, you don't tell you at a meeting, hey, my sponsor told me this week that I'm walking back to the woods, that I better turn around, that I better add a meeting. You know, and I've had that happen. It's funny, life can get so busy sometimes that we forget what gave us back that life. It was recovery, and the rooms of Narcotics Anonymous got us to a point where now we have a life. Because when I came in here, I'm like, Bob, man, I didn't have nothing going on. Nothing going on. I was so happy to be at the halfway house that required us to go to the meetings, you know, had the little slip you had to get signed. Man, I tell you what, that was my only identification I had for the first 6-7 months I was in the rooms, was that thing that had my name printed on the top of it. But then all of a sudden, because I've worked this process and done the steps, and the God that I gave my will to has provided me with a few things, all right, now all of a sudden I can forget. You know, one of the oldest sayings, that anything you forget, you're doomed to repeat. You know, and, you know, the thing about it is, I think the most significant thing that complacency takes away is that connection to our higher power. You know, it's the spirituality that, you know, when we first come in, not using is the greatest thing that happens to us. You know, hey, I'm not using. You know, I remember when I first came into the rooms, I had my 90-day key tag, and I went home, and I called my mother, Mom, I've got 90 days. Man, the answer was like mind-boggling. She said, so what? You know, Mom, I've got, 6 months. So what? I think I had like 2 years before it became so far, so good. You know? Then all of a sudden, after a couple more years, it became, hey, I'm proud of you. You know, keep doing. But always, I don't care, any conversation I had with my mother always ended, keep doing what you're doing. Yes. Keep doing what you're doing. Because even this woman, who has never done a drug in her life, knew that if I went back to doing what I used to do, then all bets were off. She'd have to put that double lock on the door again. You know, she'd have to get the restraining order. Not that she ever did, but I had her close on a couple occasions. You know, here's the biggest restraining order we have people do, is when they have to make that decision to cut us off. You know, how many of us have put our loved ones into a position where they had to say, hey, I would really rather you not come to the house anymore. You know, what must it take for a mother or a father to tell their child, you know what, you've just hurt us too much. Don't come back. You know, we love you, but we're going to love you from a distance. You know, or, hey, you know what, now you're on your own. You know, but we've put ourselves into that position. Now the thing that has got us back to where, again, people want us in their lives, we have the car, we have the house, we have the responsibility, then all of a sudden, again, because of that disease from which there's no known cure, that we better remember we have every day and take something for it, or we'll be right back where we started off. You know, I don't care. You know, I've noticed lately that you hear about a lot of people with time going back out, and I know it's happening all over. Well, I was just in California, and someone who I used to think was like an icon, you know, chose to stop doing this process, and the results are always the same. They went out, and you know, a lot of times when we hear so and so went out, I don't know why that's so amazing to us, because we know where we came from. That shouldn't be that. You know what? That shouldn't be the shock that someone went out. You know, because what that should do is be a wake-up call to us that, you know what, if we stop doing, or if I stop doing the things that keep me clean, I'm going to be in the same place. My name is Lawrence. I'm a grateful recovering addict.
And this meeting is over at 11:45, so we still have time, and it was told to me that it can become your meeting. So if anybody would like to share.